It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the It's Going Down podcast. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself and also tell us what your YouTube channel is?
Yeah, my name is Caleb. I go by Faraday Speaks. I have a YouTube channel called Faraday Speaks, and also I'm on Twitter at Faraday Speaks.
You recently put out a video about leaving the alt-right and what led you down that rabbit hole to begin with. But to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I grew up in West Virginia. I didn't grow up in a totally poor household, but I grew up raised by my grandparents. I had issues with my dad and other family members, so it was like rough growing up. I went to school. I was like a nerdy kid in school. I'd play like Yu-Gi-Oh cards in middle school and stuff. And when I got into high school, we were like the skateboarder kids that smoked pot, and I was just like an edgy teen. You know, I would fuck with the teachers. I would, you know, go online and like watch a lot of YouTube and watch like, you know, old Dead Kennedys interviews with Jell-O and just a lot of like edgy teenager stuff. You know, we used to play video games and get on mic chats and shit post and shit talk people in very inappropriate ways sometimes. I'd get on 4chan back then. But it was always like very misguided. There wasn't like some movement pushing me any direction. And I would just get into like different stuff when I was a kid, like different, like read about different religions, conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. I would have called myself like a liberal centrist back then. I was very concerned with like racism and the environment, really concerned with global warming. And my senior year, I kind of had a mentor that stepped in and helped me out. I raised my grades. I went off to college, but I didn't really have any support structure while I was at college. Fell in with the wrong group of kids, you know, just trying to chase love, I guess. Chase, like, community, trying to find acceptance. And I wasn't going to class, so when I dropped out, I hopped around Maryland and West Virginia for a little while and then came back home. And that's when I started getting back on YouTube again.
You mentioned this in your video, but what started you off is watching stuff from people like Stefan Molyneux, and that slowly evolved into watching other people on YouTube as well. For those that maybe are unfamiliar with these characters or just kind of how this process works, can you tell us a little bit about how all these things are connected?
Well, what happened to me was I was just on YouTube, and I guess I probably went looking for the self-help stuff because I was so depressed. I mean, I laid in bed. When I got back from hopping around with friends in different states, I came back home and I was depressed. And I just pretty much laid in bed and didn't do anything except watch YouTube and surf the internet. And I must have went looking for the self-help stuff. And see, when it started, I was mostly looking at the kind of stuff I would have looked at in high school. So I remember watching a lot of Alan Watts, getting into him. I remember like going after listening to him, I went and like bought all these like books on Buddhism and the I Ching and all this stuff and was like trying to understand that stuff, but not really totally grasping it. And then it went from there to I found a gamer that I used to watch in high school called Athene. He had a YouTube channel called Athene Wins, and he's just like this like kind of obnoxious like gamer bro from Belgium. It makes all these like funny videos, but he had like started making videos on neuroscience and stuff, and so I started like understanding like neuroplasticity and cognitive dissonance. It's really ironic looking back that I learned about all that stuff and then like fell into a cult. But it was just it was just very innocuous stuff. I downloaded my YouTube history, but the channel that I was using only goes back to 2015, so I can't find where I started on Stefan stuff. But it had to be that just one day I was watching this self-help stuff, and he popped up in the sidebar. And after that, I started watching Steph. And at first, it really was just a lot of self-help stuff. But that's where it started there.
Because he started as a libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, atheist type, correct?
Yeah, so he's been on the internet since like 2007, 2008. He's been on the internet a long time. And it started out, when I started watching him, it was like 2013, 2014. And so he had been making videos for a long time at that point. I remember going back and watching his old videos, though, and it's like him driving in his car to work doing podcasts. And it's like him and his wife, like, doing self-help stuff. Like, his wife got drawn in front of, like, an ethics board or something in Canada. You'll have to check that on your own. But she got drawn before some ethics committee or something and into question because she was on the podcast giving out advice. And so he was doing stuff like that, like armchair psychology with his wife. And then he was also doing, like, a lot of libertarians in the libertarian movement. He'd talk about Bitcoin. Right. He was like a total ANCAP, you know, he's like a big Ayn Rand follower and really would just push that. But at the same time, was also pushing this like defuing, which like means defect from your family of origin. And he was just very big on like, you know, you have to hold people to like almost perfect standards. And if people don't like get down on their hands and knees and apologize to you, then you have to just cut them out of your life. And that's what he did in his life, because his life was shit. And
what's weird is that if you look at somebody like him, how do you go from advocating for no state or a small state to then, you know, I want a fascist ethno state? It just makes me wonder if these people are grifting or they actually literally evolved in that direction.
I don't particularly – no, I don't know. This is just me taking a guess here. I don't think Steph started out with all this white nationalist crap. Right. I think that he evolved with it. Yeah, I do. Now, I don't have any evidence for that because he could have just been, like, concealing that the whole time, you know? But, like, I think, in my opinion, why he started doing all the race realism stuff and the IQ shit is because he's a eugenicist. I think he's just a eugenicist. Like, he wants to, like, optimize society. And in his view, IQ is like a big part of that.
He also did a really popular video with Jared Taylor, which really blew up in a big way.
He did.
Which makes some people think that perhaps they're just, you know, chasing the clicks or trying to get into that scene.
Yeah. I wonder when the first video he did with Jared Taylor is, because I remember that much later. So I don't know. I guess. See, it's hard for me to tell Steph because he's always doing like such big donation drives. It's hard, but he's also like very ideologically focused, or so it seems that way. So I can't tell if it's just for him, it's just about chasing money, right, or if he like has just fallen down this rabbit hole the same way a lot of other people have. So I don't know. It's hard to tell, and you'll never get that answer out of Steph. But
right,
he's in with those groups now, and when I was watching him back in 2014, he wasn't so much into all that like nationalist crap. He was very much talking about libertarianism. But as time went on, he just started like shitting on the libertarians more and more. And then once Trump came around, that's when he started going like full nationalist.
Right. Just curious if you think this speaks to some sort of generational divide. I know in my experience, people maybe only a few years older than you, you know, instead of playing on YouTube for hours, they would have, you know, put on a record or started a band or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's like, especially like a dopamine drive to it or whatever, you know, where you're just like constantly getting that next hit, watching videos. Even when I wasn't getting on the internet in the early days, like 2008, I know that's not early internet days, but that was like, you know, once we started getting YouTube and high speed internet, even out here in the country. And even back then, it wasn't as focused as it was today. Like the best YouTubers you had in this like ideological sense was like TJ Kirk, you know, like the amazing atheist. And so even back then, there wasn't this pool. But now, I think you're right. I don't know about your generation because I wasn't back then, but I imagine that, yeah, you guys probably put on a CD, maybe watched some TV, got bored of that, and then went outside. Like, you can't play soup. I played a hell of a lot of video games, but by the time you guys started getting decent video games, you were already in high school, right? And what high schooler wants you to sit around and play Super Nintendo all day? So, yeah, so I imagine that you guys, like, just weren't as primed for this bullshit.
Or maybe to put it a different way, there seems to be a point that happened in which sort of your involvement in online communities became, I hate to use this term, but more real than in real life communities. And there seemed to be a tipping point in which that happened not that long ago.
Yeah, that's a sense that I get from like your all's generation. Because, like, you know, when I was growing up, I'd see your all's generation a lot, right? When I was in middle school, there'd be the high schoolers. And yeah, like they didn't seem like I think the edgy teenagers fall into this shit. Like more of the normie teenagers don't really fall into it too much. Although now with Trump, I think there's a lot more. I think it like broadened the funnel because, you know, people can be sucked into Trump a little bit easier, but that's like a different thing. But like, I think for the most part, it's like edgy teens that fall into this, and the edgy teens in your generation, right? They would go out to skate parks or they'd go out to like little local venues. Even my small little town, like they would be doing that shit. So I think so. And, you know, I was talking to a Zoomer, a Generation Z, just last night, and she was telling me that they're even worse than my generation was. Like, they literally don't even have to get out of bed because their phone's got everything they want on it, right?
Right, right.
And so I think that, yeah, I think that because you have the technology and it's just so easy to do that, you end up spending more time online. And if you're spending more time online, then you're more likely to run into these content creators. And now, like I was saying, when I said that back in 2008 when I was on the internet, it wasn't this bad, what I mean by that is there wasn't this, like, totally optimized content. Now content creators are totally optimized. They have good equipment. They've got Blue Yeti microphones and nice webcams, and they can edit really fast, and the communities are there to help them. So, you know, Sargon can just pump out videos, and like any small YouTuber can just pump out videos, and there's so much content to write about because now there's so much content online to draw from. And it's just, the internet moves at such a rapid pace now, it's insane. So yeah, I think that the internet does draw people in, and it keeps people there longer, and it's just more interesting, and you get this constant dopamine hit from wanting to consume more content. And then on top of it, like, people are broke. They don't have money to go out and do shit, and it's much cheaper to just sit on your phone at home.
And what do you think the connection between that sort of, you know, mass alienation is and the growth of reactionary politics? Because, of course, people, when they envisioned the internet, saw it as this liberatory thing that was going to bring people together, not this thing that was going to be used to proliferate kind of like racism and violence and just like guttural reactionary hatred.
What I think about that is, once again, it goes back to edgy teenagers, right? And so I think teenagers have always been edgy, but it used to be that you'd had music and everything to outlet it. Now the edginess gets played out. See, my generation started out with the edginess by going on to game lobbies, like Modern Warfare 2 lobbies, and like dropping like slurs and all kinds of shit to like troll people. And we would do stuff like that. And so I think we kind of set the base for that. We set the base for fucking 4chan. And now the kids today, and even my generation, like, enjoys it as well. Like, it's so much part of the culture now, right? And so, like, that edginess just, like, fits with reactionary politics so well, because reactionary politics is about, like, kind of just getting pissed off about stuff and getting a rise out of people.
Right.
And so, you know, you watch Sargon's videos, or you watch all those people, the skeptic community, you watch their videos, and that's what they do. They do, like, these long-ass videos of just, like, getting triggered by SJWs. So I think that played right into it. And when figures like Milo came out, it's like, oh, whoa, who's this guy? Oh, my God. He's like got bleach blonde hair, and he's gay, and he's calling people cucks. And it's like, wow, that's edgy and cool, you know? And like, if you're a kid, like, I mean, I was still pretty young when I found Milo, right? I was like 22, 23. That's pretty young. And so it's just like, it plays right into that like desire you have to just like trigger somebody, except instead of triggering the Christians, which is what it used to be, now it's triggering the libs because they seem like they're the status quo now, right? And so I think that
Well, it's also easier to get away with and say, you know, all cops are bastards, or neoliberalism sucks, throw a brick through a bank window, or, you know, punch a cop in the face or something like that.
Yeah, it's just easier because, like, you can just, like, make fun of fucking Hillary and crop out fucking memes and then,
right.
You know, and then like it's just, and then you have the content creators which are pushing it too. And so when you talk about like why is online full of reactionaries, you know, we could easily had like edgy Antifa stuff, or we could have had easily had edgy shit like poking fun of conservatives because conservatives are ridiculous too. And now that I'm on the other side, like we make fun of Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson all the time. Hilarious. And there's a lot of good content there. There's a lot.
Yeah, but that seems to have a limited audience. I mean, you show most people, Jordan Peterson lobster meme, and they're just not going to get it, you know?
I think what it is these right-wing reactionaries, they sent people like Milo into the community, and they really took a foothold, right? And plus, like, part of the edginess was, like, saying, like, some fucked up shit, like even saying racial slurs and stuff, right, on Xbox chats. And so those people weren't afraid to do that, right? And then there was like this whole like thing about PC culture coming out. Like you weren't allowed to, they were trying to tell people not to say these things now, which, you know, I totally agree with now, but I think that the right wing really took advantage of that kind of shit posting trolley behavior. And then on top of that, they pumped out content. I mean, they just took over the YouTube algorithm because they just, it was like a blitzkrieg of fucking content creators.
Yeah.
You know, I could sit here and name them for days.
From our perspective, I would say, you know, things like, for instance, safe spaces, you know, those grew out of mass mobilization, large groups of people getting together to organize protests and demonstrations, you know, having to, like, you know, be stuck in conferences or gatherings and stuff like that to accomplish certain things, and just wanting a set of agreements that people could abide by so everybody could, you know, get along with each other and also hold each other accountable. But, you know, as time passed, like things like safe spaces, like took on a life of their own as tropes within the right itself and really moved out of the realm of anything that existed in reality on the left and just became something that just totally existed within the minds of people on the right of whatever they really wanted it to be. And it turned even into this movement or something like that. When in reality, it was something that even was, you know, people within our own circles were very critical of the language and certain things like how they were implemented or how people talked about them, ironically enough.
That's what I learned once I came to the other side, right? So when I came to the – now, I will say this shit does exist on Twitter. There are dum-dums on Twitter that, like, just take the hottest takes in terms of, like, what is – in terms of, like, PC culture. I do see dum-dum shit from the left. But that's mostly on Twitter, and it's mostly, like, someone that has, like, 11 followers or some shit, you know? It's, like, it's never, like, an – you know, you don't see Cat Black going on there saying stupid shit, right? But, like, they love to take something that Cat Black says and totally warp it out of, perspective, right? Like, they love to, like – you're right. They'll take things, and they'll just totally warp them into something that they're not. Because I hang out with tons of leftists now. I hang out with people in the LGBT community. I hang out with, you know, I hang out with all the quote PC cucks now, and they're all cool. Like, you go into a lobby, they're not going to tear you down because you say the wrong thing. It's just, hey, dude, you know, could you not do that? Don't be an asshole. Like, you're making people uncomfortable. So just reel it back a little bit. And then everybody, you know, the person apologizes and it was like, no worries. It's cool. Like, it's not the way the right portrays it. The right wants to portray it like you're going to get sent to the gulag for saying the R word or something. And it's just not that way. They do blow it completely out of proportion just to get views and clicks.
Well, just moving on, the next question we want to cover, and this seems to be something that happens for a lot of people within the alt-right, but just the transition between someone that's a libertarian into somebody that's, you know, very much more farther right into the realm of the alt-right and fascism itself. I'm just curious if you can talk about that transition.
Yeah, so looking back, I mean, you know, I have to look back at it from my perspective now, right, and try to think. And here's what I remember. I remember getting stuck straight into Steph and pretty much picking up the libertarianism, anarcho-capitalism. And I really liked the anarcho-capitalism because I thought, wow, this is like a free society. It's like, okay, the government leaves you the fuck alone and we all just like get along. And then, you know, I bought into the stupid free market meme where it's like competition is going to like choose the best person and like corporations have to be moral because if they're not, then people won't buy their product. I later learned that that's all bullshit, but, it started out that way, and so you wanted this free and open and borderless society with no state. And then what happens is you start to realize, well, fuck. And you're also getting fed this. It wasn't just something I came up with on my own, but it's like, well, fuck. If we want the libertarian society, there's all these people that want to like tear that society down. There's people that are like, you know, a bunch of degenerates that just want to have sex, and there's like, you know, immigrants that want to come into the country and they don't agree with our values. You want your libertarian society, but you're afraid that like all these SJWs and degenerates and immigrants aren't going to conform to a culture that is accepting of that, right? Because they all want to support a big state so they can have welfare and all these things. And so you get into this mindset that like, okay, well, we're going to need like a socially conservative society that has some oversight on this stuff so it doesn't get too out of control. And then from there, the mindset that I was in was, you know, in following the zeitgeist at the time, following like the Trump train, following people. At this point, I was like walking beside Lauren Southern, for example. When I was a libertarian, Lauren Southern was a libertarian. And then we both became conservatives around the same time. And then we both started drifting further right once Donald Trump's election really started getting kicked off. And we became civic nationalists. That word started getting thrown around. And the idea there was that the conservatives are a bunch of cucks. They're not going far enough. You know, they're not willing to deal with the issues. So we're going to close down the borders. We're going to tighten down on all this SJW nonsense, all this PC nonsense. And we're just going to have a very – it's kind of – when you think about it, it's fucked up. But you start out wanting a smaller state, but now you're kind of wanting a strong state that's in your favor. And so once you get into that though, you're getting into like the Hans Hermann Hoppe memes, the helicopter memes, you're getting into like some serious shit. And then from there you move on to fascism. I never made the full transition to fascism, but a lot of people did.
How much of that do you think is based around the creation of a notion of victimhood? You mentioned, for instance, like, I want a strong state to protect myself from all these outside forces or enemies that want to destroy everything that I hold dear.
I guess I would have criticized that way of putting it back then because I hated victim culture. But yeah, I mean, we saw ourselves as being oppressed by the state, being oppressed by like modern society, by liberalism. And we wanted to like rebel against that. And, you know, bring back the old world, the way that things used to be. There's a big element of like being a victim in there.
As you went farther right, did you end up meeting anybody in the alt-right?
So I didn't meet anybody in the alt-right, and I never posted a lot. I never like commented a lot. I'd go into like these like Jordan Peterson Facebook groups, but it was such a mixed bag in there. It'd be hard to tell who was alt-right and who wasn't. But I had a couple friends on Facebook that I'd share memes back and forth with, and they were further right than I was. And also I had friends in group chats that I knew from real life that I'd go into groups with, and we were all drifting in that direction more and more and more. But I never went to any rallies. I never like went into a gab chat. I never organized with anybody like that. This was all just – I was doing all the work on my own. And the friends that I knew in real life, they were doing the work on their own as well. And it was mostly being indoctrinated through YouTube. That was the biggest engine.
It's just really interesting to me to see your own trajectory. And at the same time as you were going to the right and watching everything with Trump unfold, also in the United States at the very same time, we had a lot of people going to the left, whether it was, you know, through social movements like at Standing Rock, whether it was politicians like Bernie Sanders, or just kind of in reaction or because of the Trump phenomenon. I'm just curious, now that you've had some time to be on the other side, what is your feeling of, you know, young working class people that were politicized in the other direction now that you've met them and spent some time around them?
Yeah, so what I'd say is people on the left, they know a fuck ton more. Most of the leftists I talk to a lot of socialists, anarchists, communists. I talk to progressives. We don't have too many liberals around. Yeah, there's a couple every once in a while, and they usually like want to make centrism memes. But most of the people I hang out with now, I'd say if you count progressives on the left as leftists, yeah, I hang out with leftists now. And what I know, there's a couple things I noticed. First of all, there's a lot less bullying going on, way less bullying. That's great. The second thing I noticed is they're more informed on things. Like they know their shit way more. The right knew all these like weird things that they would all repeat amongst each other, like race realism shit and like the great replacement and stuff like that. And you would just hear the same things repeated over and over and over. But on the left, I meet people that know a lot about history. They read a lot. They're just very well informed. And, you know, to speak about like what's the difference between like kind of the far left populism and the far right populism is the far right populism is a totally exclusive. Like even where I was, where I probably wanted a state where black people could be there, but you had to act a very specific way, right? Like you had to conform to a very specific culture or you're not in the club. Whereas on the left, it's pretty much, all right, so do you want to oppress people through capitalism? No. Do you want to like support a strong state that's going to oppress people? No. Are you going to be racist or transphobic? No. Okay, well then you can come hang out with us. And we accept people from the right all the time that have like, you know, denounced that shit and came over. But on the right, it's very much like, are you going to conform to us? Are you going to live by these standards? Are you going to live a traditionally conservative life? Or are you going to conform to these nationalistic ideals? Do you love your country? It's very much like it gets creepy as fuck. Like they say the left's a cult, but I think the right acts like a cult in terms of the identity that you have to put on. And if you get into the ethno-nationalists, then it's just like, okay, you have to do all those things, plus you have to be white.
Right, yeah. Or except a couple people get a pass, you know.
Yeah, maybe a couple people that are mixed, they get like put in, but in the end we know what's going to happen to them. They're going to
I know the TWP famously had like a Latino member and they were just like, well, he does a lot of good work, so we'll let him in. But let's now turn in another direction. You know, we've been talking about Trump, bringing him up several times, but let's really get into Trump and just his role in the alt-right. And I think you brought up something really interesting, that Trump really had a radicalizing effect on the rest of the movement and much of the right itself. I'm just curious if we can get into that and what you mean by that.
So just real quick, I'll talk about the energy that was like guiding a lot of us. There were a couple events, right? There was the fact that we were all prime because we were into edgy shit. Then Gamergate happens, and that shifts a lot of people. There's energy behind that. Right. And then we start getting into the Trump era, you know, a couple years later. And there's two things about Trump. First, there's the energy, right? Like, he was promoting this, like, anti-authority. I know this is very ironic and sounds dumb, right, but this is the perspective that was on the right for all of us. It's like this anti-authority, he's just going to get up on stage and, oh, look at those dumb old conservative Republicans, look at Jeb up there, he, you know, he's such a cuck, and look at Ted Cruz, he's such a cuck, and like he's just totally going after him, hell yeah. And then he goes after Hillary and just rips into her, and he's like crazy Bernie and you know, crooked Hillary, and he's like calling people names, and he's not even really debating any facts, he's just like tearing into people, and it's awesome and it's edgy, and it's like 4chan like came to life, right? And so there was like all this energy, and that like I think pulled a lot of us in that direction. We were chasing that energy because a lot of us thought he was dumb in a lot of ways, right? Like we were like, oh yeah, he's going to build the wall. Hell yeah. Oh yeah. He wants to stick it to China. Hell yeah. But why did he just say that stupid shit on stage? Like that was now the conservatives. I talked to a lot of conservatives. They will sit and defend the guy all day. He's their man. You know, Trump can do no wrong. But what I saw with a lot of the people that I was following, or even, you know, my friends that I talked to in chat, we were behind Trump, but we're like, this dude's kind of dumb, but hey, he's getting the job done. He's really sticking it to the libs. Look at all the triggered snowflakes. You know what I watched on election night, just real quick? I could have watched Steven Crowder's show, Ben Shapiro's show. I think Gavin had a stream going that night. I could have watched any of that stuff. I watched the Young Turks.
I was going to say, you probably watched the Young Turks, yeah.
I watched the Young Turks that night, and I just, I'm sorry, Cenk and Anna, I love you guys now, but I laughed my ass off. I just sat there and fucking laughed my ass off. Stayed up way too late, went into work the next day, tired as fuck, but like walking on clouds. So there was just like so much energy behind it. And like the policies we thought were the policies that we wanted. And there was also like, I know the alt-right specifically, they very much thought that he was their guy for a while. I know Spencer really thought that for a while. A lot of them really thought, oh, this is our guy. Like, okay, he's going to be for white people. And I remember them talking about that. And then later on, now, you know, we'll get into it. You wanted to ask about Yang. Now they can't stand Trump. They hate him.
Right. Yeah, they just put so much hope into him. And I think they felt that they really had a connection with the administration. I mean, Hope Not Hate famously did that investigation where they talked to somebody with the National Policy Institute and they said, you know, quote, we have a direct line to Steve Bannon. And it was kind of vague as what they meant by that. But even people like Richard Spencer have said, like in all seriousness, that he really thought that he was going to get a position as some sort of advisor within the administration. And, you know, these people actually believed it. And they're sad that that really didn't happen.
Yeah, the alt-right. So once again, I was in with those like civic nationalists. And so at the time, whenever Trump was getting elected, that's when I first started Richards exploding onto the scene. And I was almost defending them at first, right? I was like, well, they're just nationalists. And yeah, sure, they want an ethno state, but if they want to go make a voluntary ethno state in Montana, then they're allowed to do that. You can't tell them they can't do that. And I remember they were doing the Zeke Heil in DC, and I was like, well, Tila Tequila's there and she's Asian and she's fine. And that's and that's not a Nazi salute, that's just a Roman salute. They're just being edgy. You guys just need to calm down. You don't understand edgy humor. You don't understand edgy memes. I was very much a useful idiot in all this. Like a very useful idiot, because that's how they like advance their agenda, is like obfuscating. But yeah, so they thought they were in, right? And I think that's why they were so bold with Charlottesville and all that stuff, because I think they thought that they had shifted the window, the Overton window, further to the right than they actually had. Trump's just an opportunist. He was just saying that shit because it got him into office, right? If he could have got into office saying a bunch of edgy socialist stuff, I think he would have, because I don't think he cares at the end of the day. He just wanted power. Yeah. He just wanted to be in charge.
And a lot of people forget that, you know, Trump was a part of the Reform Party and actually left in 1992 after Pat Buchanan and David Duke joined. And he said, I'm not going to be involved in a political organization that includes anti-Semites and neo-Nazis. So I just find that interesting because, you know, 14 years later, here we are.
Yeah, he's just I see people trying to place Trump politically on compasses and shit, and I'm just like, I just think he's an opportunist. I really do. I don't think he has an ideology, except he wants to make money. Because everybody in the hood has added up to here. It's getting hotter and hotter and harder each and every year. Some kids went in a store with their mother. I saw her when she came out, she was getting some pampers. They said it was for the black man, they said it was for the Mexican, and not for the white man, but if you look at the street, it wasn't about Rodney King, it's about this fucked up situation and these fucked up police, it's about coming up and staying on top and screaming 187 on a motherfucking cop, it's not in the paper, it's on the wall, National Guard, smoke from all around.
Units be advised of an attempt 211 to arrest now at 938 Temple, 938 Temple. 30 subjects with masks trying to get inside the CP's house. Six are drunk, they're trying to kill them.
Again, we've brought it up a couple times already, but I'm just curious your take on Unite the Right, both the gravity of the event, its overall impact on the movement, and also just the fallout caused by the death of Heather Hare and everything else that happened.
Well, like I said, I think that the Unite the Right, there was, I think the reason that so many alt-righters came out that day, and those polo shirts, I like wearing polo shirts and khakis, but that's a uniform. So they all came out in uniform, and I think that they thought that they had shifted politics way further to their side. So I think that's why it was so bold. Weren't there like a lot of just like neo-Confederates and shit there, like just dum-dums there to like protest the statues as well? Like it wasn't all alt-right, right? It was like kind of like a very mixed bag.
Well, from our understanding, like there was an attempt by some people to like really create a coalition and to bring in like the Proud Boys to like, they even like, they invited people like, the Black Rebel to come speak, who actually did go to the rally, which is kind of funny. But I mean, like they made an attempt, like they tried to reach out to like, you know, Bass Stick Man and all these people to kind of come out, because they really wanted to. I mean, in our analysis, what they tried to do is basically take the energy from the March for Trump rallies right after Trump was elected, and then you had the stuff that happened in Berkeley, and they said, okay, like we're basically part of this broader coalition in the street. Let's actually become a leading force. Like, let's actually become the vanguard of this and get these people to basically, instead of just kind of like flying under their wings, have them basically take our leadership. But I think what happened was, once people saw the list of the speakers, and then especially after like it came out that the National Socialist Movement was going to come out, I think people were like, whoa, you know, this is going to be like an optics nightmare. And like, even in, I think it was like June or July, Gavin McInnes put like something out on Facebook that just said like, hey, like I'm not going to go. If you want to go, that's fine. But you know, this isn't our event. I mean, later the Proud Boys would say like, you know, if chapters want to go for it. But
yeah. So,
but mean, there were like a lot of neo-Confederates. There was obviously a lot of militia people. I mean, there was like Proud Boys there. It was a lot, but I mean, I think everybody there that was engaged in it knew that this was essentially like a white nationalist-led event, and if they were there, they were fine with, you know, fighting alongside the alt-right and white nationalists. I mean, that's how we see it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I was fucking poor and too busy with work, because I probably would have went. I probably would have went if I had, like, knew about that shit, the planning of it. Real quick, the Battle of Berkeley. I remember watching those videos and Lauren marching into battle, and I wanted to be there so bad. Like, yeah. So my view on it back then when I saw it was, I was seeing a lot of the figures that I followed there. Did Lauren go? I don't remember, but I know Faith Goldie was there, and I followed her at the time. And I was like, yeah, this is like, you know, the right is like getting together, and we're like, you know, fuck, why are they taking these fucking statues down? Like, sure, I don't support Confederate soldiers, but that's history, and you guys just want to erase history because you just want to, like, and next, you know, next it's going to be like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, all this stupid shit. Once again, I was an idiot. And I remember watching some of it live. I think I was watching Millie Weaver from InfoWars. I was watching her coverage, and she was like portraying it in this very much like, yeah, this is about Trump and this is about freedom. And then it wasn't until later after the event that I started seeing all the footage come out. I saw the Tiki Torch march. I saw, you know, heard them saying Jews will not replace us. I saw the actual neo-Nazis in fucking full neo-Nazi garb with their swastikas and their, you know, iron helmets on and shit. And I was like, what the hell? And to me, I was like, I didn't like Nazis. It's so dumb. But like, I was like, what is going on? And then I saw Heather Heyer get run over. And at first I was like, well, those protesters, they probably provoked him. Look, they were like attacking his car and he was just trying to get out with his freedom. And it wasn't until later that I saw the picture of him standing with the neo-Nazi. And I was like, oh, what? And like, it, for me, that was like a moment where I actually started getting kind of scared of the alt-right. Like the far, far right. And I was like, you know, what is with these people? They're kind of taking it too far. But I was still fucking a hardcore civic nationalist. I still believed in the race and IQ memes. I still wanted to like throw out the immigrants. So it was like this like conflicting moment for me personally. But yeah, I think that I think that you're right. I think they were trying to bring everyone together, but a lot of people had the same reaction to it that I did. And then that really hurt their movement. And now that I listen to Spencer and them talk about it now, like even Mike Enoch and Spencer and all of them, they say, no, it was a terrible idea. It should have never happened. It was bad optics. It was bad for our movement. And ever since then, we can't get past it. So that was my opinion at the time and my opinion now on it.
Well, just moving on to another topic, I'm curious, you know, when you see people like Jack Corbin or Christopher Cantwell, people that are really, you know, trying to really just be as edgy and out there and like use as much violent rhetoric as they can, like when they're actively calling for the murder and like violent activity against like specific groups of people and individuals, I'm just curious, you know, do you think that stuff that's almost seen as kind of over the top, is that just, you know, grifting in itself, or are they really hoping that people kind of hear them and carry out the kinds of actions that perhaps they won't?
Well, just real quick, I probably would have like supported these people on the auspice of their free speech, right? So like Gab, I was very much in support of that, even though I didn't go on there. That would have been my opinion at the time of Chris Cantwell and them. If I didn't know Chris Cantwell too well back then, but if I had heard him giving one of his public speeches, he probably would have toned the edge down a bit. And I would have like said, well, he has his right to say that shit, right? Do I think they're a threat? I do. A lot of people say, well, oh, blah, blah, blah. Like, not that much is happening. Like, this is overblown. These are just edgelords on the internet. But where did Brant Tarrant get all his shit from, right? Where did, you know, the New Zealand shooter, where did he get all his shit from? Where did that guy that went in and shot up the synagogue get his shit from? Where do all these Proud Boys, whenever they go out and beat people up in the streets, where are they getting their shit from? You know, it does radicalize people. And it, like, the way I see it is society is still pretty strong right now. And we still are a pretty liberal society. But things could change, you know. I'm doing a lot of research into history now. Germany was a pretty liberal society. They had like a thriving trans community and like all this like research and stuff on like trans rights. And they had like the first surgical transition and all this shit. So it's like, well, holy shit. Even for like the 1930s, Germany was pretty freaking liberal, like more liberal than you would think than some places today. And look at what happened to them and why did it happen? It happened because there was like they came out of a war. There was like an economic crisis and there was like a sense of like defeat and anxiety and loss. And like, it just took one charismatic guy. And, you know, I know I'm being reductionistic here, but it took like a charismatic guy and like a movement, a force of energy to kind of push that through. And so the way I see it, if we don't get our shit together in this country and things do fall apart economically, and there's already the despair, you know, like I said, I was talking to that girl last night. She's like 21 and she was telling me, and she lives in a major city, and she said all her friends are just totally nihilistic. They don't care about politics. They just want to like have sex, smoke on their vape pens and get on the internet. And, you know, they go out and they're in support of like trans rights and they're in support of like feminism and stuff. But when it comes to like the really, you know, politics driven stuff, like the really society moving things, they don't seem to be that interested from what she was telling me. Now, it's just one person, but I do see it, right? I see a lot of nihilism. I see a lot of apathy going on with like my generation and the generations below me. So, you know, there's already that like kind of just sense of dread and hopelessness. And all my opinion, all it's going to take is like a really bad economic situation and maybe a big war and maybe some conflicts within the United States, which I could personally see happening because there's so much tension between everybody, between the classes, between the races, between, you know, political sides. I don't think it would take much for the country to get into a big fucking shitstorm. And out of that, that's what fascists are waiting for. They openly say it. They're waiting for things to break into chaos because that's when they can step out and say, hey, guys, we're going to be the ones to save you. We're going to be the ones to bring order to this. Get behind us. Right. And they know what their coalitions are that they're going to target. So it could happen. And I'm worried about that. And even on a lesser degree, that the stochastic terrorism like we saw from the New Zealand shooter, I think we're going to see more of that.
This got brought up earlier, but I'm curious, what is your take on people within the alt-right now picking up the banner of the Yang campaign in 2020.
Oh, the Yang campaign. So Yang was obviously after my time of being in there. I'd say I'm fully de-radicalized for about 6 months now. And so Yang, when he came out, I was kind of interested in him personally as like just being on the left. He talked about automation stuff, but when I went and started researching like the hardcore white nationalists a lot more, Richard Spencer, Enoch Stryker, JF, all those guys. And this is what I hear from them. So first I hear the Richard Spencer types, right? The really pragmatic types, say things like, Yang is going to be good for us because $1,000 a month will be great for white families. It'll free up a lot of their stress so they can start having more kids. They can, you know, assert their power more. And also, Spencer, I also heard him talk on a podcast how Yang would be good optics for them. If the alt-right gets behind Yang and elects a Chinese man, it's kind of hard to call them racist at least in the view of the centrists, right? It's like, hey, we elected a Chinese man and he's a Democrat. Like, how are you calling us these far right racists? That doesn't make any sense. So more obfuscation, more like, you know, tactics and just mind games. Right. Then there's the other side. So that's the more optimistic side of the alt-right, the white pills, right? And then you have your black pills. The black pills are the ones that are going to go out and commit the violence, right? They're the ones that feel like their backs are up against the wall. Society, you can't fix it through politics. You know, we need direct action, or we need to just totally separate from society and go live in the woods. And those people, they have the mindset of, well, the great replacement's happening. White people are going to be displaced in 20, 30 years. We're going to be a minority. The politicians aren't doing anything. The globalists are against us. You know, the global Jew elite are against us, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, we had our chance in 2015, 2016, and nothing happened. So we're going to take our $1,000 a month, and we're either going to spend it on video games and porn, or we're going to just stock up on ammunition and wait. And so that's the two different thoughts on Yang. Yang doesn't want alt-righters in his cabinet or under his support, but he's having a lot of trouble keeping them out.
Yeah, I read one article where Yang volunteers were basically having to kick out people on the alt-right or basically set ground rules within certain online Yang communities for people not to use racial slurs or, you know, post anti-Semitic memes or something like that.
Yep, and just real quick, the memes that you see, the right wing's the memers, right? They pump out memes like crazy because they have communities like 4chan. So if you see all these Yang Gang memes or these like Yang Gang music videos on YouTube or those pink hats, that's all cultural creations by the right wing. So if you're on Twitter and you see someone that's like a little edgy and they got a lot of anime chicks and Yang Gang, block them because they're an alt-righter most likely.
Just curious what you think when you see something like, for instance, Baked Alaska, who just recorded, you know, a Yang Gang, you know, quote, hip-hop song, or 6 months ago they just did one for Trump. It just seems in a lot of ways these people are simply just kind of chasing the crowds or following wherever the herd is going and just trying to keep up with them and keep feeding their appetite so they continue to get clicks, they continue to get subscribers, and they continue to get money.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of that, too. I think there is some grifting going on, a lot of that. Just on Baked real quick. Baked apparently put out a video the same day I did of him talking about the Christchurch shooting. And I can't figure out if I put out my video real late at night, so I can't tell if he put it out the same before mine or after mine. But he reached out to me apparently on a Yang Gang sock puppet account. And I didn't know it was him until it had to be a leftist that warned me, because an alt-righter wouldn't have warned me, because someone sent me a message and said, hey, Baked Alaska just reached out to you on this account, and they screenshotted it. And then lo and behold, he reached out to me and was like, oh, hey, man, I left the alt-right and it was a cult. And, you know, what groups were you involved in? I was like, I wasn't involved in any groups. What groups were you involved in? And he just blocked me after that. And I tried reaching out to him last night. I'm super skeptical of the dude, and I'll tell that to his face. I'm not going to platform him, but I tried reaching out to him last night because, you know, that's what I'm doing. I should give people a chance to at least hear them out, And so I wanted to have a private conversation with him. He said he would message me back, and he didn't. So, but as far as like people like that, we got to be careful, because there are going to, I mean, I've been accused of it, right? Like there's going to be people that want to grift. Now I'll tell people there's no fucking money on the left. So good luck. I had a video with 300,000 views. I got $64 in a Patreon account. So good luck trying to grift the left, because you ain't going to get no money. But the right's way more profitable. Go hang out with Dave Rubin if you want money. But yeah.
Well, then I think that brings up the question of just, you know, even if somebody is still on the far right, you know, and they're no longer on the alt-right, I think a lot of these people want to distance themselves just because it's ruining their careers and it's hurting their, you know, pocketbooks, and that's the big thing. But, you know, somebody like Baked Alaska, I mean, just last month he went and gave a speech in front of a bunch of alt-right college Republicans in Phoenix, and they were all taking photos with each other, you know, giving the alt-right okay sign. He's scheduled to speak on May 3rd in San Francisco along people like Laura Loomer. I mean, when he did that video saying, you know, he's done with the alt-right or whatever, I mean, there was a Lions Guard Trump flag behind him, which is based off a Mussolini quote. So, I mean, again, where does this stuff start and stop? And, like, you know, where does somebody get a pass?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I talked to Mouthy Buddha last night, you know, one of their ex-alt writers is like a huge propagandist for them. And, you know, I was questioning him on the alt-right and things. I was like, you know, dude, I was like, I get a lot of these people. They try to tell me they're not in the alt-right. He's like, yeah, you'll see that a lot. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they don't want to claim the title, but they support all the same ideas, but they want to pretend like they're not in that movement. So it's difficult, and it's difficult to talk to people because they're subversive. You have to be careful. I have to be careful when I'm talking to these people because I don't know if they're pulling my leg or not.
Well, I wanted to turn now, you know, just this past month, we've seen a string of, you know, white supremacist terror attacks, arsons, and acts of vandalism and intimidation. We saw in Tennessee the burning of the Highlander Social Justice Center. We saw the arson of three historically black churches in Louisiana, in Oklahoma City, and across North Carolina, there were acts of neo-Nazi vandalism. I'm just curious. I mean, do you see this stuff growing?
Well, I think you actually need to send me some news sources, because I don't hear about this stuff so much. That's fucking awful. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me, though, and especially down south. I think you're going to see more of it. I mean, look at the way ISIS started, right? When all that shit started, you mean, how many attacks were going on in the 90s? Not many. But, like, Al-Qaeda got a cultural movement. Now, sure, they had a way bigger pool of people to pull from, because they're pulling from, like, totally destitute countries. But we have whole swaths of our country, and we're going to talk about this, like you said, that they can recruit from now, people that are in destitute places. I think that, yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. You get momentum behind something, and then people get energized. Right now on poll, on 4chan, the poll board, they're venerating Brandon Tarrant. There's alt-writers that call him, like, make fun of him and all this shit. But then there's a lot of
James Woods just shared a meme of him.
Well, there's this one meme of him standing looking like, I don't know, it's like one of the saints where they've got their hand up and then the other hand on their chest, and he's wearing the helmet and, like, this, like, weird fucking robe, and there's a halo behind his head. Like, they are... No, like they, yeah, I see this shit, like, he's a martyr to them now. So I see this shit increasing. I know people are going to say that sounds dramatic because they just seem like a, you know, a bunch of nerds, but they're white nerdy ISIS. They really are. That's what I call them. And I do personally see it increasing.
Well, I'm just curious because you brought it up. You know, poll has just had such a huge influence, both, you know, 4chan and 8chan, on the wider society. I mean, obviously for worse, but I mean, you know, they can put out something on there and, you know, even have it state like, you know, let's actually change the narrative of this discussion, like, to fit what we want. And then automatically it'll go up on the Gateway Pundit, then it'll move up to Breitbart. Then all of a sudden the Daily Caller, Tucker Carlson's talking about it, you know, then the president tweets it out, which is of course their goal. I'm just curious. I mean, how would you situate poll and the importance of it within the wider far-right and the alt-right?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask an alt-righter, they're going to say, it's just memes, they're just jokes. Like, it's not that – you're making a big deal out of this. But from my perspective, no, it's very important. It's like where they all hang out. It's where the culture starts. You know, it's like you always hear about revolutionaries. You hear about, like, you know, communists in the Soviet days, or you hear about, you know, the American revolutionists, right? And they'd always go to the pubs and the bars, and they'd sit and they'd, like, talk and, you know, and talk about theory, and they talk about what they're going to do and how they're going to push their movement, right? This is how, like, all movements work. And that's what 4chan is. 4chan is the pub. It's the bar where they all get together and they shitpost their memes and, you know, they hang out and – And every once in a while, you'll see a strategy post pop up, right? ContraPoints had one in there where they were talking strategy about Charlottesville, and they were like, you know, you need to hide your power level. You know, Charlottesville was bad optics for us. You know, you need to obfuscate with memes, and you know, they'll get on there. A lot of, like, the OK sign and the milk, a lot of that stuff is totally fabricated and to trigger liberals, right? To trick and confuse and trigger liberals. It's also for them to, like, tell each other apart, right?
Right. But
they go to poll to strategize and to do that. Now, the real strategy is going to happen in encrypted gab chats and shit. The real strategizing, the real communing is going to happen in encrypted chats. But 4chan is a way to kind of pump the message out to the masses and also to spread the memes. And the memes do – it's propaganda, right? It's like it's advertising for the cause.
So the next question is, what do you think is going to happen with the far right and the alt right with the Trump 2020 campaign? Is that going to serve as a vehicle to once again coalesce these various tendencies under one umbrella, or has that ship just totally sailed? Or are we going to see something more horrible develop if, say, somebody in the DNC wins?
I mean, I'm not a big policy wonk, and I'm not a person that understands politics a whole lot. But in terms of just, like, culture, I don't think Trump's going to matter one way or another. If a leftist gets in there, it honestly maybe could give them more energy,
because right,
they would have something to oppose. But Trump at this point, he is trying to distance himself so hard from these fucking people. You know, they're calling him a centrist now. The alt right is so. I don't think that Trump winning another 4 years, I think our country can get through it, and I think that it's not going to help the far right in any considerable way.
If Trump were to stay in office, do you feel like that the alt-right and the far right would continue to basically disintegrate and break apart like it is now, or something else would happen?
They could break apart because they have a lot of infighting as well, but They need energy to survive. Energy is what draws people into their movement, and it's what holds them together. They need energy. I don't know. I don't see Trump as providing that energy to them. I really do almost see, like, a liberal they could pump the message up again if right, just some, like, milquetoast liberal or socialist got in there. Yeah. But as far as Trump goes, he's not a magnet for them like he was before. He might bring some conservatives over to the right, and then they can pull from that crowd, but he's not spouting off the rhetoric that they like anymore, the rhetoric that was really helping them pull people in.
It does seem like the lone wolf attacks, though, if Trump stays in office, will definitely continue, because it does seem that, like, as long as he's in office, they can kind of point to that and be like, well, we've done the electoral path. This is where it leads. Now we need to, you know, pick up the gun or engage in this militant activity that is literally aimed at killing people.
I will say this real quick. Trump is, like, him and his cabinet are totally denying the white nationalist movement and the threat of this. You know, I call it a public health crisis, and the Trump administration isn't doing anything about it. And you heard that, like, Life After Hate, it was Christian's organization they turned down grants for, right? Like,
right.
Yeah. So that does help them. It does help them in the sense that they don't have the executive branch fighting against them. And so that gives them space. Trump being in office does give them space to breathe. It does.
Right. Well, the other side of the coin, of course, is people like Candace Owens, you know, saying that anti-fascists really are the real threat, you know, not white nationalists, and just kind of pushing that entire narrative.
Yeah, it's like 1 in 20 conservatives I talk to that will admit the alt-right.
Right.
The rest of them, they want to pretend they don't exist.
You know, one last question before we come to the end here. And one thing I've been thinking a lot about as we've been talking, and one thing that's come up I'm thinking about when we were talking with Christian is that, you know, anarchists and anti-fascists, I feel, have done a pretty good job despite limited resources of doing things like, you know, tabling at gun shows, doing outreach to people in prison, including white people and white supremacist gangs, trying to get them to turn away from that and took a broader look at the systems of power and domination, you know, involving ourselves in struggles and things that are going on within white working class communities and trying to offer, you know, a different way as opposed to, you know, getting radicalized within the far right. But, you know, when I think about your experience, I mean, there's nobody that's really, you know, going into online chat rooms of gamers and, you know, trying to do something like that. I mean, there's things that like ContraPoints that are aimed basically at the online space and specifically aimed at young, impressionable, angry white men and trying to get them to think about new things. But I'm just curious. I mean, you know, do we need to really think about more of upping our arsenal of tools that we have to really combat what you called a mental health crisis?
Yeah. So just real quick, Christian and the work that they're doing, that needs to continue, and they need funding and they need support to keep doing that. And their work probably is easier to do. It's in person and they can, you know, target their message easier. As weird as that sounds, you would think that online you can target a message easier, but they can like intervene at a very personal level face to face, right? And Christian's a fun guy. I saw a picture of him doing a peace sign with Richard Spencer, and a lot of people would see that and be like, what the fuck is he doing? And I just thought that was beautiful. I was like, he gets it, man. He fucking gets it. Like, so I think that the work that they're doing is great, and they need to keep that work up. But I think that there's a new battleground now. I know people don't like military comparisons, but there's a new stage, right, that is going on, and that's online. I think it's more difficult. I think it requires more energy, and it's something that I was talking to American Johnson on the non-compete stream, and he was telling me the left, we weren't prepared for you. We didn't have things for you. And I think, and I personally, I think the left has to do it. I don't think the conservatives are going to do it. I don't think that the liberals are going to do it. I don't hate conservatives and liberals, but I don't think that they're going to be the ones to do it. I think the left has to come in and do it. But right now, online at least, there's no movements for that. And there's a lot of skepticism that I see of whether that should even be done at all. So I see what I'm doing is very experimental, and I'm trying to talk.
You mean in terms of like creating content for YouTube and stuff?
Creating content for YouTube and like creating like basically infrastructure to help de-radicalize people, because it happens in a very different way. It happens through algorithms. It happens through message boards. You know, it happens through Discord servers. And you have to be edgy. You know, you got to talk to people on their level. You got to have edgy content that's funny and relatable. So I very much think that there does need to be a big push online. I hope that I can be at the forefront of that, right? But I hope that other people rise up next to me and help with that. ContraPoints is already doing that. You know, she was the one that pulled me out. But for her, it's hard because ContraPoints is a trans woman, right? And a lot of the times people need a straight white man to tell them something. You know, it's just right. The simple fact. Destiny, Stephen Bunnell, he's another person. I wouldn't so much say that he's doing anti-fascist action in the traditional sense, but he goes in and he debates with these people, right? And he like goes after these public online figures like Sargon and shit and debates with them. And that's important too. So there's a multi-pronged approach that we have to develop online that includes debate, that includes like subversive edgy memes like ContraPoints does, and that includes like me coming in and saying, hey guys, look, I was like you, and just showing like empathy, but also like giving like something that's interesting to them so where they can come over and talk to me. And I hope that I can bring more people over and find more people that have left so that they can help me, because Christian will probably tell you this is a one-on-one thing that takes a long time,
right.
And online there's just so many people that have fallen into it. So I hope to build up infrastructure, I hope to create content, and I hope to promote other YouTubers, other bread tubers on my side, so that we can, you know, populate the algorithm and have an actual message that's out there that counters their message.
Well, last question, you know, just looking towards the future, things look pretty bleak. You know, most research projects that upwards of 50% of jobs over the next 10 or 15 years are going to be automated out of existence by AI, machine learning, automation. You know, I was just watching something last night that was saying that in 10 years, you know, Las Vegas could be the new Detroit with the amount of automation that's coming that's going to affect the service industry jobs there. And that's not to mention, you know, everything that climate change is currently not only bringing now, but will exacerbate exasperate into the future with everything from climate refugees to continued crazy weather to rising sea levels and everything in between. And I'm just curious, you know, with this continuation of destabilization and just things getting worse, what would you say to future generations that are going to have to deal with rising fascism?
Well, if you need evidence that, you know, a strong man leader that comes in and kind of puts out fascist rhetoric gets, you know, people in working class, poor communities behind them, just look at Trump. That's what Trump did, right? That's why. And like I live in West Virginia, man, and I see people dying of heroin all the time. I've had four friends that died and a friend that shot himself. And, you know, like people love Trump around here. People that were never political love Trump because, like, yeah, someone's in there and they're going to save us and listen to him. He's so, because you know, this fascists are charismatic, right? Where liberals are just not. And then socialists and everybody else just don't even get a platform. So I think that a lot of, like, that's interesting. You talk about Las Vegas. I guess it's going to turn into one big robot city where all the rich people go to gamble. If we keep heading this direction, if someone like at least Bernie doesn't get in there and can't turn some of this around, get people education and healthcare and get people back to work. And also if we can't get people a sense of like community and pride again, just in themselves, which the internet really works against us on that. The internet just divides people up into their little camps. I do see it. Like I said earlier, if there's a big financial collapse and there's some kind of like tragedy that happens, or there's more chaos that could come from global warming. You know, I'm thinking of this happening more like 20, 30 years from now. And that seems like the trajectory on which like the automation's really going to pick up by that point and displace a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of refugees, and there's going to be the global warming. I don't know. I need to study on that more, but I imagine that that's going to have an effect too, right? And so all those factors combined, that's the environment the fascists thrive in, and that's the environment that they're waiting for.
Yeah, one video I was watching from one climate scientist was talking about in the last several years, there's been, you know, in Syria, 1 million people that have been displaced due to climate change. And those people have in turn, many of them have fled to Europe looking for asylum, a place to go. In part due to climate change and also because, of course, the Syrian civil war. And they were saying that this in turn has led to the rise of far right wing populism and neo-fascism. And the future looks like, you know, that could be, you know, 10 times that catastrophe, upwards of 100 million, they were saying, of climate refugees coming from the global south, trying to find some sort of relief in northern parts of the world. And yeah, I mean, it's a scary prospect.
Yeah, so over in Europe, it's way more dire, the situation I see. I talk to a lot of people in Europe, and their fascist groups are way more organized. They're actually pushing hard to get into positions of power. The United States, our elite very much seems to be concerned about making money from what I can tell. But like over there, they're getting super nationalistic in like a very tribal ideological sense. And the big part of that, in my opinion, is my immigration. The thing I hear the most from people, they talk about IQ, but IQ is just a kind of a backdrop thing. You know, that's just a background thing. Like the immigration is what pushes it, right? It's what turns people into radicals. That's what turned Branton Tarrant into a radical. He talked about in his manifesto how he drove around Europe. And everywhere he went, he saw, you know, Muslim people living. And to him, that was a death sign. You know, that was like, this is the end. So the immigration, it radicalizes the hell out of people because they feel like they're being displaced. They feel like they're losing their culture. They feel like they see violence in the streets, and they think, you know, everything's out of control. And people join up with far right movements. Ordinary people join up with far right movements, you know. So that the immigration, like you're talking about from global warming, that's just going to be a huge push. That's going to cause a ton of conflict. The United States, I don't know what so much will happen here, but if we start getting tons of refugees from South America, yeah, same thing will happen here. And that's scary. That's really scary to me.
Well, not to end on a gloomy note, we really appreciate you coming on. It's been a great conversation. Anything else you want to say? And please tell us once again how to follow your work online.
Yeah, well, I'll just end on a happy note. The thing that scares me the most, honestly, is climate change. If we can get the fucking world together on that shit, I'm less terrified. I think, but as far as like culturally goes, I think us on the left, we've got a lot of momentum online, at least. I don't know about IRL. I spend too much time on the internet, but I think online we got a lot of momentum and there's a lot of work that we can do. I think that we can really become a movement like, you know, like they, like the reactionaries created this cultural movement online. And I think that we can create that movement online as well. And I think that'll have a big influence on the young culture, on the youth culture. So anyway, and also I just want to say this is a public health crisis. We got to stop thinking of it like some sort of political movement, which it is. It is a cult, but it's a public health crisis. Like there's preconditions that set people up to fall into these things. You know, Christian will tell you that it's not about like someone just wakes up one day and like wants to become a Nazi. No, there's like things that happen to you in your life and then you get primed for this stuff and they market to you and they take advantage of you. But anyway, thank you for having me on. You can find me on YouTube at Faraday Speaks. That's Faraday Speaks, Speaks. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Faraday Speaks. And I'm very, my DMs are open. My email's open. FaradaySpeaks@gmail.com. You can reach out to me. If you're an alt writer listening to this, please reach out to me. I'm very good at sifting through the trolls, so you're not going to waste too much of my time. if you're an ex-alt writer and you're on the left or you're a liberal or you're a conservative now, message me. We'll talk about it. And if you're on the left and you just want to like work together with me or you just want to talk, I'm going to be launching a Discord server soon. So just check out the channel. You'll see that. And we'll talk.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I was glad to be on.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.